So welcome to the Knee Pain Guru Knee Pain Teleclass. My name is Bill Paravano, and today we have a special guest, a good friend of mine. Her name is Jeannie Anderson. Jeannie is located just north of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Jeannie.
Hello, Bill. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good.
Good.
I brought you in to talk with me today because I've been getting into a lot of stuff regarding knee pain. That's been one of my specialties. I had a little bit of my history. I've been working with you for a while. What has it been? About a year and a half, I believe?
Yes, it has, Bill.
Jeannie personally has helped me a tremendous amount in terms of dealing with some of the issues regarding diet and water especially. And I wanted to bring her here on the call today to share with her perspective on how water and especially diet has an effect on the pain that you feel in your knees. So, Jeannie, kind of my platform, so to speak, is I have 5 points, and the first two are water and diet and how that affects knee pain. And one of the books that I refer to a lot is by Dr. Fatman Geldi, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the one that you're not sick, you're thirsty.
Yes, right.
And could you go into your experience in working with your clients and what you've seen as far as pain in the joints, especially the knee, and the results that you have seen?
Yes, I can.
That?
Sure. Normally when patients come into me and they're in extreme amount of pain in their knees or anywhere else in their body, they are usually not water drinkers. They drink everything but water. And water is crucial for the body. When the body starts to dehydrate, one of the fluids that seems to be affected is the synovial fluid, which is in the joints. And so then the body starts compensating, and it starts pulling liquid from wherever it can in order to keep the blood at a certain consistency. The body's blood has to have so many vitamins, so many minerals, and it has to be at a perfect pH balance, has to have enough liquid in it. And when it doesn't, it starts to become sick. And when it becomes sick, then it's harder to push through the veins. Thus, we end up with high blood pressure. So with the knee pain, what ends up happening is when the body is trying to compensate for dehydration, then it starts pulling the fluid from wherever it can. And so then the knees in particular, as well as other joints, begin to dry out. And so consuming enough water is extremely important. And the object is to consume it regularly. You know, a lot of times I'll work with my clients and I'll tell them to start drinking water, and they'll start, and before long, you know, the next visit they'll come in and go, oh, well, I started good, but then it fizzled out and I haven't been drinking so much. Well, in order to keep the body consistently hydrated, you need to keep a consistent amount of water in your body. And so the amount of water, rule of thumb is you take your body weight and you divide it in half, and that's how many ounces of water you should drink a day. You can actually drink more than that, but that is your minimum dosage a day. Now, you have to be careful with water because way too much water can be a problem also, which we've heard about that on the news. But, you know, so if you stick with your body's weight divided in half and drink a little bit more than that, you're generally in good condition and will be okay with that, and your body will definitely benefit, especially your joints.
Mm. That's a really interesting point that I did not know, that the body draws from its water resources to make the blood viscous enough, or
right,
so it flows well enough to keep everything moving smoothly. That's
right.
Really cool.
Yeah, it is.
And I know in that book, You're Not Sick, You're Not Thirsty, one of the the things that Dr. B brought up was about the pH in the body, and that's something that you mentioned as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's first establish a baseline. What is pH? Can you explain pH in a little bit more in depth?
pH is parts per hydrant in your body, and it's your body's acidity and alkalinity rating, okay? And so when your body is too acid, once again, as we talked, the body needs to compensate. When your body tissues become too acid, then once again, the bloodstream is threatened. And so if the bloodstream is threatened, of course, that's your life or death. So when the bloodstream is threatened at being too acid, then what happens, the body compensates by trying to neutralize the acidity. So it starts in the tissues of the body. When the body tissues become too acid, then the body starts to get nervous and starts to do things. The first thing it starts to do is produce ammonia. When it starts to produce ammonia, of course, we know ammonia is toxic in large levels, but that's the only body's only way to know to neutralize pH. It can't make water. Body doesn't make water. It makes mucus, which is another aspect of trying to keep the body lubricated, is by producing enough, you know, it'll start producing mucus in the sinuses to keep the sinuses from drying out, in the lungs to keep the lung tissues from drying out, because those are two areas that need to stay very moist. And it also will create, too much, when the body has too much acid in it, then what ends up happening is it has to compensate. So it starts creating mucus, it starts neutralizing minerals from the body also. So then the body starts robbing itself in order to neutralize itself. So once the ammonia doesn't seem to be doing the trick, then the body will go to the bones and to the joints and start pulling minerals out of the bones and the joints in order to neutralize the acidity. So thus we're getting extra calcium in the tissues, which can build up in bones. You've heard of bone spurs. So then when this calcium starts being pulled out into the tissues, then it starts creating stones, it starts creating spurs, and it builds up in the weakest area that you have. So if your weak area is a knee joint, then that's where this stuff is going to go. And anywhere else in the body that is your weakest area, that's where they're going to pull the extra stuff to and build it up and store it there. Now, when you start drinking the appropriate amount of water, too, and start, that helps to neutralize the acidity also. But foods have a big part in neutralizing acidity. So when you consume a lot of protein and when you consume a lot of grains, those are very acid foods. Now, when we talk about acid foods, we're talking about foods that once your body burns them up, like a fire burns a log, okay, our body burns up our foods and it leaves an, yes.
I want to, for right now, I got you on a roll with this water, and I really want to get deeper on the water piece.
Okay. As
however,
far as the pH goes?
Yeah, the pH, because, I did not know that as the body becomes more acidic, it leaches stuff from the bones, and it draws calcium into the tissue.
Right.
And creates the spurs, because I know a lot of my clients have said, I have bone spurs in my knees.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor is telling me I have bone spurs in my knees, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Right.
Now, my question to you is, as a person begins to drink more water, and that is not just more water in the morning, that's more water consistently throughout the day.
Correct.
And the person has bone spurs, what is the can you explain to me the processes in the body as the body gets more to that pH balance, which, if I recall from Dr. B's book, that's 7.4?
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct? Okay.
Well,
when we get the body to that pH neutral, what happens to those stones and to those spurs that are being calcified in the joints and in the tissues as a result of drawing from the bones.
Okay, well, those can be dissolved then. If you're drinking the appropriate amount of water, your body, once again, your body will start to compensate and it'll go, okay, I've got enough hydration here, so now I can start working elsewhere in the body and figure out what needs to be done. So then the body starts checking out its systems and figuring out where there are issues that need to be dealt with. So if there is bone spurs in the bones, then the body will go and start to dissolve those and break them down and recirculate them and put them back into the bone again. So, you know, the body is very good at its design and what it is supposed to do. As far as pH balance goes, you have to be careful with that because the 7.4 is just, it's a little too alkaline for the body. Minerals are broken down in a slight acidic condition. And so my recommendation is that your pH should be, there's a scale when you buy pH paper, and that scale, it should be somewhere around 6.4. You need to have some acidity and you need to have some alkalinity in order for your body to be able to utilize minerals appropriately. So if you're up too high, like 7.4, then your body does not break down minerals as well as it was designed to do.
Got it. So 6.4 is what you would suggest as being your ideal?
Yes. Basically, because when your body is at 6.4, it's the perfect medium for your body to absorb iron. Otherwise, if you deviate either way, then your body does not utilize the iron, and we have a lot of iron-deficient people today, which iron is important for the joints also.
Got it.
Okay.
Could you, you had mentioned the pH paper. I believe I've heard it being called Hydrian. Is that
right? Yes, right. That is really a good source. And you want 2-point increment breakdowns, because if it's 10-point increment breakdowns, it's too hard to determine exactly where the body is at. So
okay.
If
you're losing me.
10-point,
2-point breakdowns. You're going to have to explain that a little bit.
Okay, well, there's different scales, all right, and the percentage in the scale is what's important. So the number scale ranges from, on the pH paper, ranges from, I think it's 5.5, and then the next step up would be 5.6, I think, is the next one. And then it starts at your 2 increments, which is 5.8, 6.0. And that's just a measure to determine what is going on, whether your body is too acid or too alkaline. And so there are pH papers out there that the percentage is 10, it's actually 10 milligram difference. And that's quite a difference. And so the coloration between the 10 is very hard to determine what's going on in the body. So the 2 milligram percent difference is where we want to be.
Got it. So, okay, for someone who would want to measure the pH in their body,
mm-hmm.
they can go to a health food store.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Generally, not all health food stores, you know, carry the Hydrian paper, but they do carry some sort of method anymore of pH paper in order to be able to determine what your pH is.
Got it. So they would go in there, and I've seen them. They kind of look like a loose roll of tape, a real
right.
loose thin roll of tape. It's not sticky, of course.
Right, and it's in a little box, generally.
Little box that you can pull it out and tear a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can measure your pH level. Can you give what you recommend to your clients?
Sure. What I tell them to do is it's really good to check your pH first thing in the morning. Now, if you're someone who gets up several times through the night, whichever the longest time you have slept, you want to test your urine right after that. And it's the very first catch. So what you want to do is you want to use, I recommend a little plastic cup, not a paper cup, because paper is acid usually. So you want to have a little plastic container kept in the bathroom, and you can urinate in that, and then you dip the paper in. A lot of people come back to me and say, well, I put it right in my mouth to test my saliva. And you don't want to do that. There's a lot of chemicals on that pH paper. So I recommend that you either keep a plastic spoon in the bathroom or a metal spoon and spit into that and then dip your paper in that. But you should keep a reading of your urine and saliva first thing in the morning. And if you get up first thing in the morning and your urine is registering 5.5, then you're pretty acidic and you do not have very many alkaline reserves. And in order to have enough alkaline reserve, you need to eat a lot of vegetables. Vegetables are what give us our alkaline reserve. Fruits will also. And if you get up and your pH is somewhere in the high 7, 7.6, 7.8, 8.0, that would be the blue range on the pH paper, then your body is starting to overcompensate. It is overcompensating and creating ammonia and pulling calcium from the bones. So that's how you can somewhat determine what's going on.
Okay. Now, I'm a little confused now.
Okay.
You had said that the body produces ammonia when it gets too acidic.
Right.
So you were saying if the person's pH is too high,
right,
in the morning when they first go to the bathroom and they check their pH level with the pH paper, and it's too alkaline, you're saying the body is too acidic?
No, well, yeah, actually it is. It is too acidic, and the body is compensating. It's trying to neutralize the acidity. Because naturally, you cannot eat enough fruits and vegetables to cause your body to go into a pH range of 7.8, 8.0. It's almost impossible. So when the body is registering, that means that the body is really way too acid. And so it is compensating by creating ammonia. And usually those people in the morning have a really, really dark, strong smelling urine. Sometimes they'll even smell the ammonia. You've done that when you've gone into nursing homes to visit somebody. You still smell the strong smell of ammonia. Well, when the body is that far out of balance, it's creating a lot of ammonia. Now, not always will you smell the ammonia, but your urine will have a very strong smell, and it'll be very, very yellow, unless you're doing a lot of B vitamins.
Got it. Well, of course, the B vitamins itself actually changes the color of your urine, a B complex.
Right, exactly.
So, are there cases where the body's pH is too high on its own?
Go ahead.
What I was hearing was whether it's too low, like 5.5, or it's too high, being over 7.4, it's both of them are indicating that the body is too acidic.
Well, not necessarily 7.4. 7.4 is a range where you can actually be alkaline on your own. But above 7.4, you want to question. You could be very acid. Okay? And usually that's when people start to get urinary infections because they're registering that the body is compensating and creating too much alkalinity, and then it ends up neutralizing the urine, which needs to be slightly acidic in order to keep bacteria under control.
Ah, got it.
Okay.
Got it.
And the other thing with this urine thing is when you do not drink enough water and your urine is too strong, it creates uric acid, which crystallizes, and that gets put into the joints. You can have quite a bit of uric acid in your joints, and that causes pain and inflammation. And when there's crystals in there, that creates, really, when you're walking, it creates a problem also, in the crystals being in the tissues. It feels like you've got little sharp pains going on all the time. When you do not have enough water in your joints also, that's when they feel like they're drying out, then inflammation starts to be produced. Because the reason being is because if the body joint shows inflammation, then the body's going to go, ah, let's get fluid there. So then it starts bringing other fluids that aren't supposed to be there. And starts trying to neutralize the joint so that the inflammation can be dealt with. And so that creates problems because it's pulling, like I said, uric acid from the urine in order to try to help also. So it's a big compensation act that goes on in the body.
Huh. Well, I know the body is always trying to find a balance. The body is always working to find that place of where it self-corrects and it could take care of the issue that it's talking about.
Right.
And everything that you're saying here is just drinking more water is going
right.
to make a huge difference in how a person feels.
Right. It makes a big difference in how people feel. But water is not the only issue. You have to incorporate vegetables into your diet also. Because water alone won't do it. If you've got a high acidic diet, water alone isn't going to do it. You really have to change your eating habits around. And in our society today, we eat a lot of grains. And those grains are very, very acidic, and we eat a lot of sugar, and sugar is extremely acid. So you put the two together, and you've got pastries. And when you live on a diet of donuts and you know, cookies and different objects that, or different food items that have sugar and grains in them, you're creating a really acidic condition. And that water will not alleviate it as much if you have that kind of a diet.
Uh-huh. One more piece about water that I had a question for you on.
Uh-huh.
I know I've been into different health food stores, and they have different types of water. You have distilled water. You have reverse osmosis water. You have spring water. You have mineral water. You have carbonated water. You have flavored waters, and it can be a little overwhelming as to what type of water I would want to drink, and what does the pH. I would imagine that different waters have different types of pH levels.
Yes, they do.
Could we kind of go systematically through the different types of water there are, and you kind of give your little synopsis on what the different types of water are and what effect that has on the body and the body's pH level?
Well, actually, when the body is dehydrated, any water is better than nothing at all. So as long as you start out drinking any kind of water, that's really important. But drinking a good quality water is even better yet. So the different types that are out there, you have your bottled waters. The one thing with the bottled waters to be careful with is the plastic, because that plastic builds up in the joints also. So the type of plastic that that your water is in, and if it's in a clear plastic bottle, you want to, that's better than cloudy plastic. Cloudy leaches into the water. All plastics leach into the water. The polycarbonates do not. They leach very, 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 very little. But any other plastic other than polycarbonates usually do leach into the water. So any type of water that you drink, whether it's spring, whether it's distilled, whether it's been ionized, whether it's been there's all kinds of different waters out there. But whatever the water's been done, you want to take a look at the plastic first. Second of all, spring water has, you know, minerals in it, of course. And so it is from a spring. generally saying, as far as water companies go, you have to trust your water company and what they're doing. But the spring water is from springs. They're supposedly underground springs. And so, of course, they have a complex of minerals in them from the springs itself. The reverse osmosis water, which you can buy a system and put it on your water system, and it's called reverse osmosis, that is a filtration system that takes out pretty much everything from the water. Not totally, though, but any kind of large particulates it'll take out of the water. It will leave some minerals in the water also. And that is a form of water that you can use, too. And that, of course, will take out most of the pesticides, herbicides, anything that is in the water systems, your fluorides, your chlorines, and things like that, which are very detrimental to our joints also. So you can use that kind of water. There is distilled water. Distilled water is actually a cleansing water. And so when you use distilled water, it literally will cleanse the system of any unwanted materials in there. Inorganic, there are such thing as inorganic minerals which are being built up in our systems, and it will remove those. It's a cleansing water. So to do distilled water is great, but distilled water in a soup or in the stores is normally in cloudy plastic. And that, once again, being that distilled water is cleansing, it literally really has a lot more plastic in it than the other waters too. So you want to be careful with the distilled water that you purchase. Minerals in your water are good to a degree. If you're trying to cleanse, you don't want a water with minerals in it. But if you don't have, if you're not trying to cleanse, then water with minerals is okay.
Well, we can get into a whole topic on cleansing.
Right.
However, just for the scope of our talk today, I just want to get like the basics, the fundamentals of, you know, a person walks into a health food store, or a person is drinking water out of their tap at their house, or they look at some type of water purification device, you know, what is going to help them achieve that balance of that 6.4 in their body. You know, we got the fact that they'll take their body weight divided by 2, and that is approximately the ounces of water they would want to drink per day consistently throughout the day. Now, I need to know, okay, what kind of water should I drink? Because they have the fruity-flavored bottled water in a glass container on the shelf. Is that better than the clouded plastic distilled water? And I just want to get like a baseline for people to go by on what to look at.
When you put something in the water like fruit juice, then you've got a food substance. It isn't necessarily that great for hydration. You know, if you want to drink a fruity water, that's fine, but you can't consider it part of your water consumption in order to create hydration in the body. Like I said, because it becomes a food substance then. So anything that you put in your water really doesn't count as far as hydration goes anyways, in order for your body to be able to, you know, put more synovial fluid in. Is that what you're looking for, Bill?
Well, yes. We went over spring water, you went over reverse osmosis water, and you went over distilled water.
Right.
And you were saying if a person is drinking spring water in terms of balancing the pH in their body, is drinking spring water on a regular basis going to benefit them?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, water is extremely important, and so, you know, drinking spring water, and that's what I'm saying, you really, water is so crucial that the body will accept any water that you put into it. It's just that our city waters have so many chemicals in that, you know, that kind of creates problems in the long run, but just starting to drink water and getting your body used to having enough water. The one thing, too, Bill, is a lot of people go, well, I'm not thirsty, I don't want to drink. Well, that's an issue. That's one of the signs of severe dehydration, because your body will no longer have the mechanism of thirst. your body won't register that you're thirsty when you're so dehydrated. Now that seems like an oxymoron, but that's how it works. And so when you start drinking water, when you start incorporating it in, then your body does then begin to get that thirst sensation back, which is really beneficial. Anybody who has rheumatoid arthritis, and especially in knees, rheumatoid arthritis is a water deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So the water is crucial no matter what kind you put in, just so you start putting it in. And once you start putting it in, then you can start looking at, okay, maybe I, want to start drinking better water. And looking at the different avenues of water and what's available out there and, finding what's best for you.
Sure. Going back to what you said about if someone isn't thirsty,
mm-hmm.
and how you're saying that it's such an advanced stage of dehydration that the body's mechanism for thirst has already been shut off.
Right.
I can relate to that on another mechanism in the body that is quite similar. And I know you've probably experienced this if you have a project due or you're working on something around the house,
mm-hmm.
and you get tired, yet you keep pushing through that being tired, all of a sudden it's like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and you know you're exhausted, yet you can't fall asleep.
Right.
It's like the body has already shut off the mechanism for understanding how to go back to sleep.
Right.
And it just reminded me when you were saying, a person gets so thirsty or the body is so dehydrated that it shuts off the mechanism for wanting something to drink,
mm-hmm.
especially water, to be able to bring the body back into balance.
Right. Once again, it's the body's way of compensating. It will try and tell us, everything that we need to know, but if we keep ignoring it, then it just quits. It's amazing how that happens, but it does.
Yeah, the body is quite fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So, whether you're looking at reversed osmosis, distilled spring water, bottled water, whatever the case is, the fact if we can get it into our bodies so it begins to hydrate better,
right.
is going to be a good starting point for someone who's looking at knee pain.
Right. And the other thing with that, Bill, is a good starting point is the fact of once you divide your body weight in half, you do not try to consume that all at one time. As you know, if you're not used to drinking water, you really need to gradually build your body up with that much water because it will be such a shock to the body it can't handle it. So you really want to be careful with that. So gradually start building up, by starting, if you're not used to drinking water at all, just start by putting in a quart a day and then continually, keep increasing that to the amount that your body needs.
You're suggesting that my body weight is, I'm about, let's say, 200 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be looking at 100 ounces in water that
right.
I would want to begin drinking.
Mm-hmm.
A few days, I'd want
right.
to ease into that gradually.
Yeah, right. You want to start out by just, if you're not used to consuming water at all, and there are people out there who don't, and their body is trying to survive on all the colored water that they drink, or colored substances like coffee and tea and things like that, juices, and they think they're getting their water content through those. They will get some water content through those, but not enough. But if you're not used to drinking water, what you want to do is you want to just start out, for instance, you, Bill, at just starting out with a quart of water, measure it out, because if you don't measure it out, you really do not know how much water you're getting. So I suggest people put the amount of water that they need into a container and just drink from that container in order to see just how much are they drinking. And so what you do is you start out by, first of all, Bill, you're going to start out by trying to consume a quart of water a day. And for people who are not used to drinking in water at all, that can be difficult. And so you work at doing that. When you're comfortable at getting your quart of water in, by that time your thirst mechanism is going to be starting to kick in. Then you can start and add another quart of water and try and fit two quarts of water in a day. And you kind of want to, you know, wait till you're comfortable with getting your whole quart of water in. If it's a struggle, you wait until it's no longer a struggle. Then you consume the next quart. And everybody's different, and that's just it. That's how I work with people individually, because everybody's systems are so different. Mm-hmm. And so that is my rule of thumb as far as trying to build up your water intake when you don't drink enough water.
Got it. Okay, a few other questions that are coming to mind.
Okay.
In the summer, it's a heck of a lot easier for me to drink more water than it is in the winter.
Yeah.
In the summer, it's like I'm hot and I'm sweating, and it's easier to go and get a, you know, a big bottle of water and drink that than it is in the winter. It's kind of cold, and it's like I'd rather have something warm, like a tea or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're saying that the body isn't going to get as much benefit if you're putting stuff in your water. As far as hydration.
Right.
What are there any tips or tricks you can share to help hydrate the body, especially in the winter, especially when it gets cold, to motivate to get the water down?
Well, the one thing you want to be careful with in the summertime is most everybody hits the ice water in the summertime. And the one thing with ice water is that it literally slows down digestion and it slows down enzyme activity. And your body is functions with enzymes totally. It makes the whole body work. So the body has a tendency to the enzyme action in the body, the ice water will slow that down. And so if you're drinking ice water with your meal, that will also cause your digestion to not work as well too. And as far as the winter months go, as you've noticed, Bill, once we start to turn on the furnaces, okay, that is when everybody starts to get sick. And that is because the furnaces are drawing the moisture out of us also. And so our body is compensating by making a lot of mucus. And when the mucus has been in the body too long, then that's a great breeding ground for bacteria to grow in, as well as an acidic condition. But you can always, in the wintertime, if you want something good to drink, if you add fresh lemon to your water, and you can even drink a hot cup if you like. I have to have a hot cup of something in the wintertime. If you add fresh squeezed lemon juice to it, that helps to alkalize the body. And so that's one way to start getting used to drinking water, and it, by doing that. You can also drink just warm water. You know, I have a lot of clients who prefer to do that in the wintertime as opposed to drinking cold water. You can add a little bit of something to your water, but it cannot take the place of the amount of water that you need to drink. So, you know, like I said, just by adding lemon or drinking some warm water to get started. Because once you get started, that's the major issue, getting started. And then the body will take over with the thirst mechanism, and then you'll want to drink water, whether it be winter or whether it would be summer.
I know, well, you were talking about drinking ice water in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, it's very difficult to even drink ice water. It's so cold. You know, it's like I just take a little sip and my body just doesn't want to drink that much more water.
Right.
I know for me personally, I prefer just room temperature water or just slightly cold.
Right. Room temperature water really is the best to do. You know.
And can you explain why that is? Why room temperature is the best?
Well, basically because of the, once again, the enzyme action in the body, you know, when you chill your body down to that, you know, to the point of drinking ice water, and that's what it does, it chills the body down. the body's temperature goes down when you drink ice water. That's why in the summertime when you're outside and you're working and you're sweating and you're overly warm, you know, of course everybody individually is hotter than others. And you know, the body does want, well, not so much the body, but you want to cool the body down, which is not necessarily what the body needs. It doesn't necessarily need cool down. It needs the hydration. And so that can be a kind of another thirst mechanism that it uses in order to get you to drink, in order to be able to hydrate yourself. But it's a matter of the cold, the room temperature water is, once again, you know, closer, it's not closer to body temperature, but it's going to be closest to body temperature. And it causes the enzymes to be able to function better also. It's just a warm water is fine, but the ice water is where the problem lies, and because it keeps the body so cold that the you know, the digestive system functions with a lot of enzymes. The whole metabolic system is enzymes, and so it the cold water just slows the body down. Being, you know, totally cold slows the body down. You know that. Whenever you get chilled to the bone, they say, you know, all you want to do is curl up and do nothing. You just want to curl up and try and get warm, and that is the, you know, the body is struggling at that time. And when it's struggling, it has a tendency to shut down and make you slow down. And that's what happens with drinking too much cold water also.
I know, well, back to what you were saying, as far as drinking cold water as a means of cooling your body down is not necessarily what you would, how you would want to proceed, because the body's mechanism for cooling down is sweating.
Right.
And if you're trying to cool it down instead of sweating, you're not getting enough water in for the body to sweat to truly cool down.
Right, exactly.
Ah, okay.
Well, yeah, and that's why, you know, as soon as you start sweating a lot, that's when you know, most people think about drinking water. That's about the only time people think about drinking water. And that is the body's mechanism to rehydrate itself. Because now it has just sweated out a lot of fluid that it can't afford to lose, because it's already in a state of dehydration before you even start sweating and doing something. So, you know, it's kind of a very much a protective aspect for the body to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I almost hesitate to ask you this question, because I know it can lead off on another...
My tangents?
Possibly. Okay. If a person were to drink warm water in the winter with a little bit of fresh lemon in there in order to begin to hydrate the body, can they put some sort of sweetener in it?
To feed everybody sweet tooth?
Yeah, a little bit, you know, and there's so many out there. And like I said, I don't want to get too much into a tangent on that one, because I know that can be an entire...
That's a Pandora's box.
It certainly is. However, is there some suggestions, some real brief suggestions that we can give as far as... I know one of the things that I like is honey, especially local honey. And I know that's not necessarily what you might recommend or what you might suggest. However, local honey works just a little bit. Maybe I've heard of other ones like natural ones, especially natural ones like stevia and agave nectar.
Yeah, because we in our society do have a very high sweet tooth, and so to drink just plain lemon water is really not appealing to a lot of people. So what you can do, you don't want to add sugar, because once again, sugar is acidic. Whether it is raw sugar or not, it is still an acid food. So definitely adding some honey a little bit. You want to watch your sweet tooth, because that leads into whole other problems. So, but you can add a little bit of honey to your lemon water, your warm lemon water. The thing that I really like is maple syrup. Maple syrup is very high in minerals, And so it's really wonderful. Pure maple syrup is really wonderful in a lemon drink. And you can do that. You can even add a little cinnamon to that too, which makes it neat. Even a little bit of cayenne pepper if you're interested. There is a cleanse out there that uses lemon water and cayenne pepper, and maple syrup, which is a dynamite cleanse. But yeah, definitely using some sort of natural sweetener. Stevia is great because stevia does not spike blood sugar levels. So those who have a tendency to deal with diabetes or high blood sugar or low blood sugar, can use stevia because it's not going to cause the blood sugar to change whatsoever. And that is an herb. It's naturally grown. What they do is they grind it up, the leaf from the plant, they grind it up, and that leaf is very, very sweet. So you can use that, too. You just want to really be careful with the artificial sweeteners. Do not use those. Those are going to cause you problems, and especially in the joints. So beware of the artificial sweeteners and do not use them.
I know, like you said, stevia is an herb. At a local farmer's market, I've seen them growing where you can go buy the plant, plant it in your yard.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a really inexpensive way to, you know, have your supply of stevia. And then all you do is pick the leaves and, you know, put them on a cookie sheet and let them dry. You can put them in the oven at a low temperature, very low temperature, like 150, and just, you know, slowly let them dry. And then you just crumple them up and put them in a container and you have it all winter.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can grow a little plant on your, you know, on your windowsill.
Sure. Let's see, what else can we talk about water? See, we went over the pH level in the body producing ammonia, water. What they can do is alternatives in the winter.
Coffee, the one thing for people, we have a, you know, huge society of coffee drinkers, and what we probably should discuss, Bill, is the dehydrators that are out there. And coffee is a major dehydrator, and it is difficult on the liver.
You're talking about liquids dehydrators, meaning you're talking about specific liquids that someone would drink that would actually take water out of the body.
Yes, definitely.
And essentially take your scenario that you're dehydrated.
Mm-hmm.
Which is contributing to knee pain,
mm-hmm.
and it's actually taking more water out of the body.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Go ahead. I'm interested.
Okay. So there are dehydrators out there. Your coffee is one of them. It's a major one because we consume so much coffee in our society. So it really is a major dehydrator. So when you drink coffee, you need to drink twice as much water as coffee that you drink. The other one is tea. Tea is a dehydrator also, your regular tea. Now, if you have herbal teas, that's a different story, unless the herbs are some sort of a diuretic. So you want to watch your regular, you know, black teas. A green tea also is a dehydrator. So there are substances out there that are good for you that you still have to be careful when you take them, such as green tea. You know, it has antioxidant value and it's good for you, but it can dehydrate. So you want to be aware of that. The other food substances, sugar is a dehydrator. If you'll notice, those people who... And one way you can tell whether you're really dehydrated too, Bill, is what is your stool like? Do you have a very hard, dry stool? If you do, that's a sign of being dehydrated, because your intestinal tract needs the fluid also. So that's just another mechanism to use. There are different liquids, and the coffee is the major one. Tea is another one. You got to watch out for the energy drinks also. Those are the major ones. There isn't a whole, sugar is a major one as far as dehydration goes, because it takes a lot of water in order to neutralize the acidity that sugar produces. But as far as foods go, if you're eating foods from your raw state, you're fine. But if you're eating chips with a lot of salt on them, you know, those are going to be problems. That matter of fact, those will cause your body to retain fluid, which can create problems, too, in a joint. When a joint is swollen, you don't want to be eating a lot of salty foods because then you're retaining more fluid in that joint than what you really want to. That's about it. I just know coffee is a major one.
I'm not much of a coffee drinker, so that's never been an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in the past when drinking those energy drinks,
yes,
I know they contain a lot of sugar.
Right.
And I know in just having a little sip of those energy drinks,
mm-hmm.
my thirst even begins to go away. It's like I don't
mm-hmm.
feel like drinking as much even when I take a little sip of it.
Right.
And I know if I were to drink water in that mm-hmm. place instead,
mm-hmm.
I would drink a considerable more water than
mm-hmm.
I would the energy drink.
Right.
Right. It also, there's a bunch of other effects. I kind of feel full and bloated
mm-hmm.
after, you know, having an energy drink like that.
Right.
So it kind of all ties back to water is definitely the best thing to really get into and begin drinking on a regularly on a daily basis, evenly throughout the day.
Right, definitely.
Okay. Well, Jeannie, we're going to be wrapping it up here shortly. I want to thank you so much. You're a wealth of information. And I do want to get you back. I thought we were going to have some time to get into the diet piece.
Right,
however,
that's
seeing
important.
Is that there's so much information as far as just with water goes, I wanted to kind of keep a focus for the call today.
Mm-hmm.
However, if there was someone out there who would like to get in touch with you,
mm-hmm.
How would they go about doing that?
Well, they could get in touch with me at Anderson Health Emporium, and that is located in, it's 230 East Portersville Road, Portersville, Pennsylvania, 16051. My phone number is 724-368-2098, and we also have a website which has some information on it that's valuable, and that is www.andersonhealthemporium.com. So, you know, anybody can reach me through those avenues.
Well, great. Well, Jeannie, I want to thank you once again
so much
for being with us here today, as well as I want to talk to you here shortly about getting you back to talk about the diet piece, because I think there's a whole bunch of...
There's a lot there that needs to be dealt with, too, Bill.
Yeah, as far as tying that into how that affects knee pain in a person's
right.
body.
Exactly.
Okay.
All
well,
right.
thank you once again, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.